From the heart of Europe to the world, this is RTI.
EW to his friends. Eric Wiltshire.
Welcome back to part two of Postcard from Poprad with myself, Eric Wiltshire, Lee Banks in the UK and Mark Gander in Paris. And I am going... I'm sad in one way, but I'm going to so enjoy this because for the last 20 years, people have been wittering and twittering on that Macs are better than PCs because they don't get viruses. How wrong are you lot? The flashback Trojan, which is not nice, boys and girls, and that's why you should keep your firewalls and your antivirus up to date, has apparently hit 550,000 Macs around the world because there's a Mac botnet running around.
Which is most of them, isn't it?
Well, yeah. It's got to be said that when you talk of PC numbers versus Mac numbers, it is a significant difference. Sorry to everybody in America who now hates me, but I'm sorry. Macs were wonderful at one time, just that PCs have caught them up now. So if you have a Mac and you are a Mac owner and you're still going and believing that you can't be attacked, please check everything. Please check everything. The flashback Trojan can affect your Mac. And there are solutions from one of the firms is F-Secure. They have instructions on how to find out whether you're infected or not. And also how to remove said Trojan if you've got it. But my message to everybody is, for God's sake, keep your antivirus and your firewalls up to date.
Absolutely. In very simple terms, Eric, what does a Trojan do to you or do to your computer?
Well, it's in the same words as the if we go right back into the mythology era and also some of the early Greek and Roman history eras, there were Trojan horses, weren't there?
Don't you patronise me.
So therefore, think of them exactly in the same way. They get into your computer, they run
around.
What
do they do, though?
They can do, some of the Trojans are actually quite harmless. They'll put stupid messages on your screen.
They do things like that. I thought they were just sort of complicated or rather more sophisticated forms of adware and things like that.
No.
They can take your personal data. They can hide and get all your passwords and this sort of thing. Or they can simply set themselves up in part of a network to distribute spam or to do other fraud. They can be very nasty.
Yeah, and the worst ones can just sit there and effectively eat your entire data on your computer, including your operating system.
Why would they want to do that?
Because they can.
And that's as simple as that, isn't it?
Well, they're written by geeks, you see, and that's why they say, beware of geeks bearing gifts.
Yes, always a good idea.
Trojans.
So, you know, they are very serious. There are some silly ones.
That's a good joke for Easter, actually.
Oh, stop it.
What?
I know. But anyway, apparently there's seven, as Mark was quite right, 57% of the infected Macs are located in the US, 20% in Canada, which goes a long way to say how many over here are sold, not so many. and which is why I have a tablet not made by Apple. And a computer not made by Apple, and a phone not made by Apple, that all talk to each other. Funny, that.
Remember,
isn't
if
it?
You're taking tablets, an apple a day keeps the doctor away.
Oh, don't start. I find the next story rather interesting, as I have to gloat slightly and say, I think I said this last week. Apparently, the government has said it was a good idea to get the fuel panic thing going.
Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen and everybody else. You didn't say that.
Excuse me?
Because of this. Because what? I said this.
What was my theory? Does anybody... Would you like me to get it out the server and play it to you again?
Go on, then. Well, me and Mark will have a talk. Finish the show with something else.
Did I not say it was possibly done on purpose?
Well, he did, but now we actually have the proof of it. We actually have the proof in a leaked report that Cameron actually told his cohorts that, what a good idea, lads, let's cause a bit of a fuel crisis in Britain to stop these naughty tanker drivers going on strike. And what did they do? In one fell swoop, they poured £320 billion into the coffers of the UK, raised the price of petrol yet again to absolutely unmanageable sorts. And actually, I think this is the best part of it. Cameron has been totally discredited in the popularity ratings because of everything that his government has done in the last few weeks.
When is the next general election in England?
Well, 3 years.
3 years away.
3 years.
Everybody will have forgotten about it by then.
Well, they're certainly pull their socks up because he's certainly doing a lot of damage, but he's doing the damage in the right time, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. Shame on the press, but government spying as well, says Lee, because the BBC has reported, well, in fact, so has just about everybody else, that GCHQ, which is the UK's listening intelligence agency, will be able to it's not that they should be able to monitor. They can.
That's right, of course they can.
But they're listening to, they listen to RTI, it's their favourite station, I guess.
Of course they can. Even if you mention the word GCHQ in a sentence with GCHQ in it, GCHQ will know about it, GCHQ will listen.
I know, but it isn't the point, is it, really? As far as I'm concerned, that isn't the point. We all know that GCHQ can do this.
Right.
The simple fact is that the government is going to legitimise that listening in to everybody. There are people. There are laws where people can you can listen in to terrorist suspects. Anybody, you can actually listen in and monitor people. Now they're going to make it feasible to listen in to everybody willy-nilly, whether you're doing anything wrong or not. You will be followed. Apart from the fact that this is probably one of the most horrendous invasions of your personal privacy. Just remember that the government and the country have been pillorying the press for doing exactly this on a far smaller scale for the past 18 months.
Can I just
and now they are going to go ahead and do it again. What?
Can I just correct you a little bit?
I'll walk off. Ludicrous stupid will walk off.
Well, all I'm going to draw is the analogy of those that are authorised to do it being the intelligence agency by law. And the press who are not by law authorized to go phone hacking and email hacking and everything else. That is the standard way that things work.
Well, then can we also then just bring into the mix that now Sky have admitted that they have hacked. Sky have stood up and admitted publicly that we hacked into John Darwin's emails, the canoe man who faked his own death. We've hacked into, the paedophile. And what they've actually done, and they've done this to prove that actually the hacking by the press of certain people's privacy is actually something that should be lauded. While we are attacking the Fourth Estate for doing something that the government now says that they are going to do more thoroughly than they've ever done before, the press is now standing up and saying, but yes, we do this. We've always done similar things to this, but we do it for the greater good of man. We don't do it as a blanket thing just to check on people because we can. We do it, and the information that Sky carried, collected on John Darwin and the other people, was actually used in court as evidence, and they brought these people to justice.
Of course, made big headlines out of it for themselves.
Of course it did. That's what they're in business to do.
Let me try this one. Okay, so you're now the managing... No, definitely not. somebody else is the managing editor of Sky News who figures out... somebody else is the managing editor of Sky News, okay, and they figure out how to hack into Lee Banks's software and his computer and how to read all of his emails. I would say that they should then go to the police and say, excuse me, chaps, this is how it's done, this is what you'll get, then you can take them to court. And if they then turn around and go, bugger off...
Because you're giving the control of the media again over to governmental power.
But the police are empowered.
Well, of course they are, but what we're saying is that in this case we have a clear case here where Gerard Tubb, the Northern England correspondent for Sky, mm-hmm. accessed the emails belonging to this canoe man. His crime wasn't the world's worst crime, but it was, you know, quite a dramatic thing, mm-hmm. and found evidence which ultimately helped this man to be brought to justice. Mm-hmm. And that is what the press has always, always done.
Without the sanctions.
Without sanctions of the law. Yeah, without the sanction of the law. Quite rightly, too. That's because we can always go to places that the police cannot go. In our investigations, we can go places that the sanctioned investigators of this world cannot go. And that is why the Fourth Estate is so important to this universe.
The dumb thing about that is currently BSkyB are being investigated by Ofcom to see if they're suitable to hold a broadcast licence. Yeah. And they've actually broken the rules.
That's right. There you have it. That's how this world is destroying its own... The twistedness of the way the powers in this world are treating things, where something that actually ultimately does good for the world, i.e. the Fourth Estate, I have to use the Fourth Estate because it represents all forms of journalism, mm-hmm. and they are trying to mute something which has the power to create good and to shine the lights in the beds of the twisted and the cruel and
right.
the insane.
Hold on a minute. Let's just have a balanced view here, Mark.
His view's not balanced.
What? No, I'm asking what the
totally unbalanced.
What does the press do in France?
As far as I can gather, the press in France is sort of pretty subservient to the government, but partly because they're very, very heavily subsidised by the government. And I mean, I'm talking about subsidised directly even to journalists in terms of tax reductions and train fares and so forth, which is quite extraordinary. And also because there seems to be, I don't know, almost a fashion for politicians to marry journalists.
Good point.
Nice one. Staying with that kind of area for a little bit, and I have to preface this by saying I don't remember every candidate for the mayoral elections in London, but if you go online, there's a whole ruddy list of them. Go to BBC London's website, there's the whole lot is listed there. Boris Johnson and Ken Livingstone have had a bit of a spat on the on my old station, LBC 97.3 in London, with the mayor repeatedly calling Mr. Livingstone an effing liar as they went nose to nose after the debate. And is that acceptable for a mayor of a town or city to stand there and go, effing this and effing that? Is that right?
Everybody else in the world is allowed to do it apart from broadcasters, so why can't they?
Well, I do understand it was a private conversation in a lift, so...
exactly.
It's a bit strange, and I'm a bit sorry that it got out, and it seems to me that maybe Ken Livingstone, who I think is pretty good, maybe grassed him up to make some capital out of that, and I think that was a shame.
I'd like to ask a question here, which is totally against the grain as far as I'm concerned, right? But I would just want to know what the answer is. This thing of Boris Johnson swearing at Ken Livingstone in a lift, as Mark has pointed out, in a private conversation, why have the press used it? Why do we consider that to be a news story, that the mayor of London, old Boris, has said the F word to somebody he doesn't like? Why is that a news story? I personally would have used the story, but I'm wondering how you could, whatever that word is, the use of this story. Condone the use of this story.
Condone, substantiate, what else?
Not substantiate. No, that's the totally wrong word.
All right.
I'm just correcting you now. The totally stupid is correcting you. Condone is the word. You put it on the list. You tell us why you thought it was a good story.
Well, I know. I actually think, quite rightly like Mark, that it's not a story. And I'm confused as to why places like... publications that I respect, the London Evening Standard, for example, I don't understand why it's such a big story, other than obvious that there is the one connection that they're in London and there's an election coming up, da-da-da-da-da. But I don't see why it's got on this huge bandwagon of a slight story in the paper becoming a massive story, and even, you know, foreign broadcasters to the UK picking up on it and running the self-same story. It's just bizarre. I don't get it.
I can explain it.
Well, go on,
if you would wish me to.
Well, be quick.
Very, Very simply, it's because that these two powerful people who control one of the most powerful cities in the world actually are so hate each other so vitriolically, right?
that you can't even say it.
Yeah, vitriolically, right? Yeah. Hate each other so vitriolically, and that is the place that British politics is sinking to.
I don't think it's ever been any different.
Probably hasn't, but it's still proof that it goes there.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the other things that people around the world won't realise is that, for example, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mark, in France, certain areas of language and nudity and various other unacceptable things in the UK will be shown on television with a little... I think it's a circle or a pyramid telling you what age it's about, and the same is here.
I've never known the warnings, and I can tell you they use a lot of nudity here in France. As for language,
a bit more grown up than us, not being ashamed of nudity. We're all nude at some point in our lives.
Well, I don't think it's nudity in that way. I mean, I think it is sort of glamorising and sexualising, and I think it's shown too early on. You know, my children at 7 o'clock are seeing, sort of strip shows and so forth.
Hang on a minute, that's your fault. You're the parent.
I'm afraid you're looking at some kind of sort of, you know, cabaret thing with sort of circus acts and this kind of business.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So, you know, but they're all being hosted by, you know, sort of, a whole number of topless women with plumes and, you know, hardly anything else on. I mean, look, you know, for adult entertainment, you know, I suppose it's great fun. I think it's a bit needless, frankly. I'd much rather watch more interesting things on the television.
Nudity and sex aren't interesting.
Nudity and sex are very interesting, but I have to say that, you know, I think it's quite denigrating to women, and I don't think sex needs to be denigrating to women or to men, but I think...
What is more denigrating than nude women is the fact that it's still wrong to show nude men for some inexplicable reason. That is far more denigrating.
Yes, that is inexplicable, but of course, you see, what we've got here is we've got a situation where you've got people like Dominic Strauss-Kahn, who's been involved in swinging parties and apparently convorting with prostitutes and so forth. This kind of thing's gone on with sort of Berlusconi and what have you, and, you know, there's a certain nastiness about that, and the trouble is that it seems to be supported and maybe even congratulated and certainly protected and protected by the government, protected by the establishment, and I don't think you'd find it so protected in Anglo-Saxon regimes. I think that kind of nastiness comes from that attitude which allows those kind of things to be shown on television.
I'll tell you what's very bizarre on radio here.
Yeah,
and I heard it this very, very
lots
morning.
Lots of nudity on radio, Derek.
Yeah. I'm doing topless radio now. the fact is that you listen to both English and American artists, and their lyrics contain a whole heap of profanities every time they're written. But now they are sanitised, where they change words beginning with S and F to something else in the lyrics for British radio, whereas they're played quite openly, and you will hear the F word and other such adjectives in songs. And yet, when there's a naughty word in Slovak, they'll bleep it, which is totally bizarre because all the kids know the English words anyway.
That's right. I can never get
my head round whatsoever. Anyway, let's move along, boys and girls. We've had enough of that one. The true cost of BBC's terror talk is one that Lee wanted to bring up, with the BBC interview with a terror suspect allegedly estimated at the public purse of £500,000 payout.
I think I just found this interesting because of the rising again of the attacks on the press, and that the BBC have been pilloried for spending up to £500,000, supposedly, on interviewing a terrorist. Now, the way that £500,000 was made up, it wasn't like the old return to old checkbook journalism where they gave him money. What it was that they had to get him out of a top security prison and spent 7 hours with him, and the interview only lasted for a few minutes. Mm. But I think, I would like to say that I think and this is to open this debate, really, that the spending by the BBC of that £500,000 was more than worthwhile when you consider that this chap is a self-confessed terrorist who has caused so much trouble throughout the sort of wild European world of war, that the people he knows, the things that he knows and the things that he could talk about were worth listening to because it edifies the public.
Mark?
Well, I think there are some issues here. And I mean, you know, whatever he's done and whatever he hasn't done, and, it doesn't look as if he's kind of sort of savoury character that you want around. The fact is that he's been in prison or being held in detention since, what, 2003?
Yeah,
I think.
That's right.
I think he's done quite a lot with that in solitary confinement. I think that it brings all sorts of questions to bear upon the whole question of extradition treaties, and particularly the arrangements that we seem to have with the United States. You know, this isn't the only issue. There are other people. There's that poor guy with Asperger's. And I noticed that on the BBC just the other day, in fact, just 2 or 3 days ago, there was a piece about the use of solitary confinement in the United States, which is even being criticized by some United States judges, and two men in particular who've done 40 years, mm-hmm. 40 years in solitary confinement. I mean, it's unbelievable. Mm. I think that there are so many issues here. I think the money is well worth spending just to have it all aired. And I think we need more of it aired. Congratulations.
Well said. To get it well out. Said.
Okay, I'll put the other point of view on. What you've just done is publicized the bloke and made him famous.
Yep, that's absolutely right. And I think that's what it needs, because it's transparency on this kind of thing, which is very, very important. We're not talking about fame here, where he's going to get groupies and fan mail and this sort of thing.
I bet he does.
Fine. But, you know, we're talking about the fame here, where it's actually not the fame for him. It's fame for the issues. It's fame for the situation. It's fame for the laws involved. It's fame for we're talking about fame for human rights, actually.
That's right.
Very good.
Right, let's move. Two more stories to get in before the end of the programme. Andrew Lloyd Webber is being nice again, and I don't care.
No, I don't either. Forget him. Let's do something more interesting.
Right. Because we're going to be on RTI 2 this coming week at the Gadget Show in Birmingham. And don't forget, that's our Debbie, possibly Lee.
Me!
Harry and Danny will be reporting from the show back to here. A story's come out drawing on a download, which is amazing. Mobile game Draw Something, the mobile game, has been downloaded, according to Zynga, which are a big games company. They're all over Facebook and many other areas. 50 million times in just 50 days.
That's
50
million
times in 50 days. And the interesting thing is that in the last budget, at long last, the government got round to recognising that games manufacture and making is something that should be helped. Mm-hmm. And I hope they're listening to this, that 50 million downloads is the claim made by Zynga, who make this thing. Although Apple won't agree to any sort of figures that come out from anywhere, as they never do.
Is it a British company? Who are they? American company?
I think they're an American company, if I remember rightly.
I think they are. It's very interesting, the fact that while Britain is in the doldrums, that the gaming industry is something which is burgeoning and becoming so powerful and also appealing to on so many levels. There is gaming now is not just something where kids sit in a room by themselves watching a video screen. This has become one of the most creative aspects of education and entertainment in the world today. It's almost like a new Hollywood. Gaming has become Hollywood.
I'll give you a statistic I heard on the radio the other day, that gaming is now worth more globally than the film and music industry put together.
Quite likely. Amazing. And it's because it appeals to teenagers and young people, and
Lee. Turn it around a little bit. If the government woke up to this and encouraged teenagers to go into these areas, which you don't have to be a techie to do gaming, because you're on my world here. You don't have to be a coding person. You don't have to be somebody who's a 3D animator. You can even go and do quality assurance in gaming. So there's room for real techies, real artists, real...
Absolutely.
All this thing. And rather than put people into stupid positions and force them into some old dinosaur thing that's dying out, that's your new manufacturing UK. Wake up and smell the coffee.
That was the point I was going to make. And also, what I was going to say, that it isn't an area for young people. I actually have a friend or an acquaintance who is 71 years old and has created his own game for the apps industry. And he's looking for somebody to put it. It's an incredible industry. It's probably the best industry in the world today.
Gentlemen, do you remember us finding a young lady as we tried to do a little feature on the game, not the games, but people changing direction earlier in the year?
Where
we had a young lady called Mrs. Stewart on, who's a mum at home, da-di-da-di-da, and I think she told us a rage, which I won't repeat, but she's out there as a mum with teenagers and changing her career from an artist, you know, in paint form, over into the games industry.
And, yeah, you know, absolutely.
And that's what the UK, in fact, a lot of Europe needs to do that.
Yeah. While we're in the doldrums, go where the young people are going and see what they can do. Allow them to use their creativity to create something good for this world.
Absolutely. Mark, I don't know if you're aware of it, but there's, I think it's in Cannes or somewhere, where they have an international festival about gaming every year.
Well, yeah. I didn't know anything about it.
Really?
Nope.
Are you all the children into games?
Yeah, the kids are. A bit too much, actually, I have to say.
dare I say, are we on to, you know, the PlayStations or the Xboxes or the Nintendo Wiis?
No, well, we've been off the... We were on the Nintendo DS, and now we're just on PC games, and we're playing Minecraft.
Minecraft.
We're also playing GTA some quite violent ones, actually.
I like Pingo.
Pingo. My God, what time did you play games? Anyway, that's about it for this week, boys and girls. That was Postcard from Popweb with Mark Lee and myself, Eric. Don't forget, RTI 2 goes on the air on the 10th of April, all the way from the Gadget Show in Birmingham, where I'm sure you're going to find out a lot more about games and gaming, because that's the big thing of the show, and of course the TV show as well. And erstwhile mentioning Lee Banks... might be along. There will be some other celebrities joining. Debbie Penson, Harry Cole, and Danny Palmer, who are all working in the games industry and will bring in us the news on RTI2. Till next week, boys and girls. We'll see you soon. Say goodbye, girls.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye, girls.
From the heart of Europe to the world, this is RTI.